KPCW News Time is 8:17. On the phone with us is UtahPolicy.com Managing Editor Brian Schott with his weekly legislative update. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you.
How are you doing this morning?
Everything is good. Heading on up to the Capitol to start up week five here.
Nice. I guess it's been a busy time for you.
Yeah, it has. I mean, we're just, we've got 16 days, which translates to about 13 days of actual work left for lawmakers, and there's still a lot to do before they adjourn, sign, or die 2 weeks from this coming Thursday. We've still got to set a budget. Last week, we were the first to report that lawmakers were considering a pretty big tax overhaul bill, and that that still hasn't even seen the light of day yet. So we're still waiting to see that. So there's still a lot to do heading up to the final days of the legislature. There is some good news, though. Lawmakers did find out on Friday of last week that they have about $100 million extra dollars to spend, which will help out quite a bit because the revenue projections, lawmakers were expecting them to remain flat, meaning they would have about $260-$270 million to spend, most of that going to education funding. The new revenue numbers gave them $88 million of ongoing money, and then another $12 billion of one-time money that they can use for roads or buildings or something along those lines. So that was a bit of good news as we started to head into the final weeks of this year's session.
Well, I know I would be happy if I found an extra $100 million to spend. What do they anticipate they're going to use that for?
Well, as I said, a lot of that is going towards education. Last week, lawmakers unveiled their priorities for public education. About $70 million of that is going to go to just fund growth in schools. There's going to be 10,000 extra students in schools next year. That's a city about the size of Bluffdale coming into Utah's public schools. So they need to spend $70 million just on the growth. Then they want to boost the weighted pupil unit, which is the basic unit they use to fund schools. They want to boost that about 3%. Every 1% is somewhere between $25 and $30 million. So that'll be about $90 million that'll go towards the weighted pupil unit. And then they have a few other things. So about $170 million of that $380 million surplus is going to go towards education. Then you take what's left, about half of what's left is going to go into rainy day funds and a couple of other ongoing funds. So they're probably going to have somewhere around $70 or $80 million to throw at spending requests, but they're going to have about $500 million in spending requests. So they're going to fund maybe a fifth of what lawmakers would like them to fund. So there's just not a lot of extra money to go around, even though the revenue numbers did show a big uptick on Friday.
So what about the new tax reform? Lawmakers said last week that they want to put a sales tax back on food along with other measures. What's happening there?
Yeah, they've just decided to do this. Basically, their philosophy is broaden the base. They want to increase the number of people who are paying taxes, and then that will cause a boost in revenue. They want to lower the rate as well. So what they're planning on doing with these tax reform measures is revenue neutral for the first year. So right now, our flat tax here in Utah is about 5%. That's what everybody pays on income taxes. They want to take that and drop it to about 4.5%. So that will reduce everybody's tax rate. But so it's not a tax cut. They want to put the state portion of sales tax back on prepared food. And that would be about 4%, somewhere in there, maybe 2 to 4%. And then what they want to do, the number of deductions that people have and the amount of tax that you pay tops out right now at about $155,000. They want to drop that to $100,000. So higher income people would be paying more taxes, even though it'll be a lower rate, and then everybody would be paying income tax on food. So that would make it revenue neutral. In the long run, what that's going to do is it's just going to give lawmakers a more stable income tax base to deal with when they're setting budgets. They feel that Governor John Huntsman, when he was in office, made a big mistake when they got rid of the sales tax on food. But there are some lawmakers, that's going to be a really hard sell, because a lot of lawmakers feel that adding the sales tax on food back in is regressive because it hits poorer Utahns a lot harder than it does those who are of a greater economic means. So we'll see how they get this thing through, but they're pretty determined that they're going to get this done, and they wouldn't have unveiled it or talked about it to us unless they were pretty confident that they had the votes to get it through.
So you think they'll definitely be able to get it through then?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a done deal. There may be a few tweaks, and they're still talking about the rates here, but it's already been decided in both Republican caucuses that they have the votes to get it through. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be talking about it.
So the liquor laws, Zion's curtain bill is still not public. What's happening there?
Yeah, we haven't seen that one yet. We've been expecting it for a couple of weeks. And the Zion curtain is just a small part of this bill that would change, impose some reforms on liquor here in the state. One of the interesting things, though, is that former Senate President Michael Wada, he left the legislature a couple of years ago to serve an LDS mission in Europe. He was one of the architects behind the Zion Curtain, which everyone knows is a barrier in bars and restaurants that prevents people from seeing drinks being prepared. He's up here on the Hill and lobbying lawmakers to keep the Zion Curtain in place. It looks like there was at least the momentum to get rid of the Zion Curtain. A lot of people don't like it because it makes the state look weird. There's some loopholes that restaurants have been using to get around. Senate President Wadups, or former Senate President Wadups, wants to keep that in place. So he's been lobbying lawmakers to keep it. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out. It is telling that we have not seen this bill see the light of day yet, and we're 16 days from the end of things. So that's going to be an interesting fight that I think will come all the way down to the end. I don't know what the compromise is going to be, but I sense some uneasiness in getting rid of the Zion Curtain, even though a lot of businesses say it's an undue burden on them. And there's really a way to get around it if you want to.
I'm new to Utah. What is the thinking behind the Zion Curtain? I don't get it.
Well, the thinking behind the Zion Curtain is that they want to discourage alcohol consumption among young people. If they don't see the drinks being poured or made, then they will not want to drink alcohol. That's the whole thing behind it. There's really no evidence that it works like that, and it's just an added cost to restaurants. Plus, as I said, there are a number of loopholes. If a restaurant was in existence before the Zion Curtain came into being, well, then they don't have to put one up. So there's a number of restaurants, bars and restaurants, that don't have that there. These places have also figured out that instead of getting a regular liquor license, if they get a club license and a beer license, well, then they don't have to put one up at all. So there's a loophole there. So, you know, it hasn't worked the way that proponents of it thought it would work. And as I said before, it looked like there was some momentum to get rid of it this year. I don't know how strong that momentum is. We'll see over the next 16 days.
Okay. So there are 16 days left. What's left to be done?
Budget. The budget is the big thing. And as I said before, all the committees have put their are putting together their priority spending. We've seen the education priority spending. That's been a big one, and that's going to eat up a big part of the budget. But there's a lot of places that just aren't going to get the funding. I've heard that, you know, the Huntsman Cancer Institute, which has gotten a lot of funding in the past from the legislature, they may not get much, if any, simply because the money is so tight this time around. So they have to set the budget. There's going to be the fight over the Zion Curtain. There's going to be a couple of other reforms, and this big tax reform package that they're going to put in place. Those are going to be the fights over the last 16 days, and really they're only up here for the next 13 days because you know, they don't have weekends here. So, you know, it's going to be a tough haul over the next 2.5 weeks to get things done.
What are you watching out for in particular?
I'm really watching how this budget is going to play out, because it's going to be kind of like budgetary thunderdome, because there's not a lot of money to go around. Lawmakers originally thought they would only have about $20 million to throw at spending requests. That number's probably about $60 or $70 million, but there's still, like I said, there could be over $500 million in funding requests and only $70 million to go around. So it's going to be a big fight to see what actually gets funded this time around, because there are some big requests out there, and they may not get any money, and they may have to wait until next year.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Brian. Have a great day.
Sure.
Drive careful, and we'll talk to you next week. KPCW News time is 8:29. Well, the planning director, Bruce Erickson, made it in. Tonight, there's Board of Adjustment meets.
That's correct.
Tonight, and you also have Planning Commission Wednesday night.
This is a busy week here in Lake Wobegon, so we're going to be busy. Tonight's the Board of Adjustment, and this is more of a unsung hero group. These folks really need to take the land management code and really review it, because they only take action when there's an appeal of a decision. So there's two appeals on the Board of Adjustment tonight. The first one has to do with the Star Hotel on Main Street, right next to the Imperial and just north of Treasure Mountain Inn. And the Historic Preservation Board made a determination that the building is classified as significant under the Land Management Code and the design guidelines. And the applicant, the owner of the building, is appealing that decision. And so we'll have a chat with the Board of Adjustment this evening. Because the facade of the Star Hotel with those nice curved windows and things, that's been changed over time. And also the roof line is classic Park City, in that it's changed a half a dozen times, and you can still see the old building on the backside, but it's got some different roofs from the 1940s and 30s. And planner Anya Gran has really got her hands around this building, along with Hannah Turpin, and we'll just see what the Board of Adjustment says and take a look at what the Historic Preservation Board said as well. The other one is also classic Park City. This one's at 352 Woodside. The applicant is asking for a variance to add additional height to the building. We have some mechanisms in order to accommodate the Americans with Disabilities Act needs for elevators and garage size. We've made a determination that, you know, some of the things the applicant is asking for is not within our purview, and so they're appealing that decision. That'll be tonight. It'll start at 5 o'clock. It'll be at City Hall.
So my recollection of the Star Hotel is the owner would really like to tear it down. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the owner would like to develop that property in the way that they feel best, and it is, you know, it's a significant structure right now, and we just need to go through the work and make sure that all the decisions were made correctly.
So what's the likelihood of it being taken off of the significant list?
Oh, I'm sorry, I never bet these things.
Good to know.
You know, I have a full suite of bad habits, but betting the Planning Commission or Board of Adjustment is not my deal.
So the Board of Adjustment doesn't have a regular meeting time. It's just when these things.
We try and schedule them for the first or second Tuesday of every month. But if they don't have anything on the agenda, then we don't make them come in and take up their time. But they spend a lot of time reviewing the packets. It's probably a 40-hour review of the packets before they come to the meeting. And they really are sort of an unsung group. And you probably don't want to say hi to them in the grocery store. But
okay, so why does the city want to keep it? You said it's classic Park City. What does that mean?
Okay, so in a lot of ways, the first thing is that we have a set of criteria that the city council has adopted, and that's our historic district guidelines and the land management code. And so on that basis alone, we can review historic buildings or buildings that are potentially historic. And those buildings that are significant or landmark really do connect us with the culture and tell the story going forward. If we just lost all of our buildings, we would not see folks on Main Street taking pictures. and the folks that move here for our lifestyle would not be able to understand the culture of in which we live. So not only do the buildings speak to the historic preservation, they speak to our culture, our cultural landscape, and our story of this town going forward. The Star is more and more classic because it was built, and I'd have to look in the packet when the construction time is, but it underwent all the changes that this community went through as it moved from mining era through difficult times through the ski area. In the changes inside that building, Francine's little coffee shop soup store was in it. So that was part of our local culture as well. So there's a lot of touchstones in this building. We're just going to have to see if the regulations were applied correctly.
Yeah, I think it was the late 1800s it was built, if I remember right. And there's a story of bootlegging and police officials being arrested.
Right, right. It has a bunch of background story in it. And those are great stories, but they don't play to the land management code or the guidelines. We need to be pretty rigorous on how we do our job.
Okay. So what can you tell me about Planning Commission and their agenda?
Okay, so the Planning Commission meeting coming up tomorrow night at 5:30 at City Hall. Some good news, I think. The city is moving forward with the two affordable housing projects on Park Avenue at 1450 and 1460 Park Ave. And those are actually moving. The two historic buildings have been picked up, moved out of the way. The foundations have been poured. As soon as those buildings go back on the foundation, then six new units will be constructed for a total of eight. So the Planning Commission tomorrow night is going to review the final plat for that so that the building permits can be issued. We're going to be taking a look at the parking and a couple other matters, but those things are moving forward. That's a year in the works, and Rhoda Stauffer and her team are really working hard to deliver units. And they're going to look pretty – could be a fun project, I think. We'll see.
I know they're changing some of the code or making changes to it for affordable housing?
We are doing that. You'll start to see that in March. We're looking at two strategies from other jurisdictions and also kind of a self-baked plan. We want to make sure that we're doing affordable housing without any more drama than normally occurs. So our land management code has some techniques in it that allows us to move this forward. We're either looking at a way to do an overlay zone across the town that would tend to smooth out the affordable housing, or we're looking at a way for the city to designate its own projects and do the design review slightly differently. Our approach is infill is substantially better than new growth, and we want to protect the neighborhoods either from gentrification or overdevelopment. So we have a responsibility to the existing neighbors. And residential folks really want to be able to rely on those decisions that caused them to buy those houses. So we need to be really careful how we make changes in that. I think the public will really like 1450 and 1460 and that project. I believe that the new project at the fire station site at about 13th and Park and Woodside also I believe the public will be really proud of. And you really won't know that it's designed for affordability. It will fit into the neighborhood, and it'll bring more folks to take part in that community.
So I know at Thursday's city council meeting that they addressed the rezoning of Rossi Hill.
Right.
But they're also sending some stuff back to the Planning Commission to think about. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I can. And I honestly, I don't know that we've gotten to the bottom of everything yet on that. The situation was this. The neighbors asked us to consider rezoning a parcel of Bureau of Land Management ground on Rossi Hill at Deer Valley Loop. We sat down, came up with a couple of strategies. We needed to make sure those three historic houses were renovated and allow the potential owner of that ground at least some economic return to be able to do that. That was important to us. On the other hand, those properties were agricultural back in the 1850s, 1860s. Those were small farm grounds, and those folks that have claims to those houses were born there. So the rest of the ground is zoned recreation open space, which doesn't allow any development generally. And there were a couple of little slivers of ground that are also BLM lands. One contains kind of an informal trail and an animal track through there. we're looking now to see if we didn't capture those in the rezoning request, or they were not captured in the zoning request. And as soon as we figure that one out, we'll go to the Planning Commission and request an additional rezone to ROS.
Okay. And for what I understand, what I remember from the meeting was so the animals would have a...
Well, you know, there's elk and deer and moose are what we classified as charismatic ungulates. And that means people have an emotional attachment for them. And so there's a lot of emotion on those animals without really understanding how those animals' life cycle moves through and how they move through the neighborhoods. So it's a good idea. Our general plan calls out that we need to protect animal habitat. I think there's some scale issues in that the moose and the deer and the elk actually have territories of several square miles, not 50 square feet. So, you know, we're working on that one. We'll see it as quickly as possible. It's an important project for us. A couple other things coming up. You may not, you know, sometimes we speak a lot in jargon in my business, and we have a lot of secret codes and people...
Yes, you know. I know, which is why I keep you after the meetings to say, what did that mean?
No, I understand and I appreciate it. But my counterpart in the county, Pat Putt, and I work pretty hard to try and speak normally. So what's hiding in a Planning Commission packet for tomorrow night is the Land Management Code amendments for what we call the Storefront Enhancement Program. And that's a four-part strategy to maintain the character of Main Street, which includes community-based stores, restaurants, bars. So Hannah Turpin, Planner Turpin, has moved forward with what I consider to be a very creative method where we take the historic rhythm and scale of our historic buildings, which are approximately a 50-foot facade width, as outlined in the guidelines, and then apply that to the commercial activities in the building. So a commercial activity would have to maintain that 50-foot scale, and then if there was additional space, then that space could be used for a different business or could be used as incubator space, could be used in a pop-up situation. So there's all kinds of innovative new 2017 techniques inside this technique that she's created that we call the Storefront Enhancement Program, and that couples with the vertical zoning we have, which doesn't allow for real estate offices and some other offices on the first level. It also covers into Planner Grand's historic preservation program for our landmark and significant sites on Main Street. So it's tiered all of those things. And then the fourth leg of that stool is the economic development work that Jonathan Weidenhammer does. All of those combined together are our storefront enhancement program on Main Street.
Okay. So Treasure Hill did not meet this month.
We had comments on the 8th. They'll be coming back again on the 8th of March. My understanding was that the traffic engineers for Treasure Hill were counting traffic over the weekend. We've asked for a couple of different locations. I believe Alfred Knotts and his team tried to figure out how to count pedestrian traffic on Crescent Tram. I was out there Saturday, Sunday, and Monday having a look and trying to get an estimate of how much walking was going on. It's a little bit surprising if you're not into the community like our folks are to just see how many folks are walking down Lowell and Empire Avenue. And you're really seeing two trends at work, globalized trends. And we'll talk a little bit more about the next thing here in a second. But with the growth in nightly rentals and VRBO and Airbnb, we have a lot more folks in the neighborhoods that are walking to the ski area because we just have that many more nightly rentals. So on that same topic, Matt Dias and the city attorney's office are working very, very hard with the legislature, state legislature now, on how nightly rentals and short-term rentals are regulated. It's a policy decision that we're working hard on in that if you're kind of a conservative person, you want to make local determinations of zoning, right? And you want to protect property rights. And if you're sort of a liberal person, you also want to protect the property rights in people's neighborhoods. And so that's the discussion that's going on. Right now, Park City does not have very rigorous regulations on nightly rentals. We require a business license. We require them to be inspected for fire safety. We have a couple of neighborhoods where nightly rentals are conditional use or not allowed. But the vast majority of the town, you could do a nightly rental.
Wow. I know that there are some changes going on currently with that.
Oh, yeah.
And so is there anything that I didn't, well, yeah, is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have?
Yep. The last thing that's coming up tomorrow night is we're making some adjustments to our land management code in the master development plan section, which is how we allow our bigger projects. We are trying to get a lot more clarity, reduce the amount of regulation on the front end, make it more transparent to the public, and increase our specificity coming out the other side of the process. So while it looks like we're ducks on a pond just kind of sitting there having coffee, the folks in the background are really, really working hard. We are proud of our new planner. Tippi Moreland comes to us after 3 years of experience. She's a planner too, and we're very proud to have her. She's got a little bit different experience, USC grad, BYU grad. And she's going to help us kind of expedite some processes, and we're looking forward to it.
Nice. Okay. Well, have fun at that meeting tonight, Bruce.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. That was City Planner Bruce Erickson, or excuse me, Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Well, KPCW News Time is 8:45. In studio with us, with an update, is Recycle Utah Director Insa Ripon. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How
awesome.
Are you?
Just great.
Good. So I interviewed you several weeks ago, and I thought we would have somebody new, but you're still here. So welcome.
Well, I am so sorry.
Well, no. I mean,
my last day is April the 1st, and until that time, I'm still here. So one more time.
Okay, good. Do we have somebody to replace you, or are we still looking?
Not yet. Not as far as I know. We have a fantastic number of our volunteer board of directors doing a search. They have come up with some good candidates, and they will let you all know when they have found the one.
Well, I will enjoy you as long as you're here, and hopefully run into you afterwards.
Well, next time I'll bring someone along, I hope.
Okay. So what can you tell me about how Park City and Summit County are doing in terms of recycling? I understand that.
Well, the recycling rates are great when it comes to Recycle Utah. The county is challenged with people not putting the proper things into the bins. So let me just say what's proper and what isn't.
Okay.
Into your curbside bins, you put hard plastics number 1 through 7, any type of paper, including corrugated cardboard. That's really, really a big one. The cardboard boxes should hopefully be broken down so that you can fit more in. And then metal cans, as in soda cans and bean cans. That's it. No glass, no styrofoam, and no soft plastics, as in plastic bags. And we really don't want you to put your recyclables into a large plastic bag, like a garbage bag, and then stick it into your bin. The danger with putting any kind of plastic bag into the bins is that it really mucks up the sorting system, and whatever you have in a bag is going to be pulled off the line and will just be landfilled. And there's an additional cost to that. So do it correctly. That would be helpful. That would make recycling possible. And if you choose not to, maybe you shouldn't do it at all to prevent contamination. Contamination is the enemy of any recycling operation. But we are doing increasingly better. So there are a good number of folks, about 380 per day on average. That's every day of the year. 380 cars, that's a 20% increase over what we had last year. And the numbers are just incredible. So Park City and Summit County folks are awesome. The families are coming with their kids and their grandpas, and they're doing it right. So thank you to everybody who's taking the time to sort their recyclables at our center. And just to give you a couple of numbers, so last year we recycled 3,519,000 pounds of glass, metal, paper, and plastics. So that alone is an 8.34% increase over the previous year, which is remarkable. If you could, you know, get 8% on your money these days, that would be a good number. But the incredible number out of that, of course, is that we're getting 380 tons of glass alone. So folks are bringing us their wine bottles and their beer bottles, and we appreciate it, because the more you bring us of that, the more we can recycle locally. And that's really an important success story because it provides jobs here. We have 10 to 12 full and part-time employees at the center. It keeps our curbside recyclables clean, keeps it out of the landfill, but it also provides jobs in Salt Lake City. And most of the glass that we take in is being turned into another product within the state of Utah. So recycling provides jobs and economic benefits all the way around. So, folks, recycle your glass with us. And some of the lesser known items that we take throughout the year also have incredible numbers. 97,000 pounds of electronic waste. That's pretty remarkable. That's your cell phone and your CPU and your own old television and anything in between. So continue to please take that out of the landfill. So your options in Summit County are to either bring it to Recycle Utah, and fees do apply, or you can bring it to the Summit County landfill in Wanship, and a television drop-off there costs $10 as well, because we need to pay to get it recycled, taken apart properly. And then, you know, the snow is going, but we are accepting skis and snowboards and poles right now. So if you have a chance to sort out the old equipment, bring it to us. We take it daily. It's remarkable how much is out there, and it's not recyclable. So we are seeing an influx of people who are making chairs and benches and other things out of it. Another amazing number is the number of car seats we get. So car seats are only good for 6 years. So if your kid is 6 years old and you still have that car seat around, please don't put it in a garage sale. It needs to be brought to us. And last year we had about 1,200 pounds of car seats that we brought, that we took in and got recycled. Batteries are ever increasing. Everybody seems to know that you should not throw away a battery. So whether it's a car battery or an alkaline battery, please bring it to us. Another option would be the landfill, and they will sort it out properly. It does not get landfilled. But the alkaline batteries alone, 7,800 pounds. That's a remarkable number.
That seems like a lot. Is that?
It is a lot, yes. And we ship them out in 55-gallon steel drums. And it's a very, very costly adventure, but it works.
I was shopping for batteries over the weekend, and I saw that they now have batteries made from recycled batteries, which is great.
Which is standard in California, not quite here. But just, folks, when it comes to batteries, just bring them to us. That's a better option. And, of course, summer is coming soon. It looks like it's here already, but not quite. But whether you have thin tires or fat tires, the bike tires and inner tubes need to be sorted out separately. They don't belong in your garbage can. So last year we had about 3,000 pounds of those that we sorted out. And we actually separate the inner tubes from the bike tires. So there's a lot of work involved in that. But if we're doing more separation, we can recycle more. So remarkable numbers.
What about people? I know... I know people who like to work on their own cars, change their oil, spark plugs, tires, things like that. What do they do with the old oil, the old spark plugs, and those things?
Okay, there is a state law that anybody who works with cars, like a tire shop takes the tires back, there's a fee to drop those off. That's a state law. So when you buy new tires, you actually pay $2 per tire for the recycling fee. So you can take it back. They might charge you. It depends. But automotive tires are a different animal altogether. There is a state law. They will be taken care of. And the same goes for oil. You can drop off your used oil if you do it yourself at an automotive shop, and they will take it for free. So when it comes to the do-it-yourselfers, there are provisions made for you to do it correctly. Do not drop your used oil into the front lawn, because we live where the water comes from. That means you drop it, you drink it. So don't. But we also have two hazardous waste drop-off events coming up. The first is in first Saturday in May. So it's all scheduled. We've done it for many years, and you can drop off your used oil there as well. A couple of events coming up, though, where we're continuing on. Green Drinks is going to be scheduled for March the 14th. The topic is transportation. So we will have folks from the city and the county come and talk to us about transportation option. And the site is Grand Valley Bank. That's the Frontier branch right here in town. Also on May the 30th, Meet the Producers is happening at the Swanner Eco Center. And that is a good way to find out where you can get your food from locally. We have to remember the food miles are part of our problem worldwide. So if you have a choice between an apple coming from Utah versus Chile, I'd suggest you pick Utah. They have great apples. And our green business program is really booming, so I hope that more businesses sign up. At the moment, we have about 29 businesses signed up and certified. If you want more information on that, recycleutah.org is our webpage. Please send us an email and say, I'm interested, I want to find out more about it. And our Mary Closser will come and happily talk to you about it.
So what is your green tip for the winter months?
You know, I just read a report yesterday about the very thing that I wrote down for you before I saw the report. And that is, I can't tell you how important it is to have live plants in your home, especially in the wintertime. They provide you with clean air, free of charge. All you have to do is water them once a week. So whether it's a little teensy-weensy spider plant or a larger decorative plant, get some live plants into your homes. That's the best thing you can do to get clean oxygen into your lungs. It makes the surroundings better. Every office should have them. Get rid of those plastic plants. They look awful, and they don't come with benefits. I know you don't have to water them, but get some live plants. I think it's highly underrated. Yes, I have a lot. I tend to have more than I should. But every house needs to have green plants.
And office.
Especially for offices. So where's your spider plant in this office?
I
have to bring you one.
I am going to get I'm going to get myself a plant today.
There you go. And then, of course, remember that Earth Day is coming. Earth Day is always April the 22nd. This year it's a Saturday. So, again, we're planning our big Earth Day dinner with lots of events planned that day in addition to just honoring Earth once a year, April 22nd.
Do you care to share any of those other events that are going to be taking place?
Yes, of course. Thank you for asking. We're going to have a charm event because we are so charming. Mm-hmm. And that means we are the Center for the Heart to Recycle Materials. And we're going to be accepting more than what I just mentioned on that day. We are working on a couple of fundraisers as well. And, of course, our big fundraiser will be the Earth Day dinner at Wasatch Brew Pub. They have invited us back for many years now. First Squatters, now Wasatch Brew Pub. And we will serve a healthy dinner at a low cost. And we just want everybody to come and celebrate that day. I think once a day we can do that. Once a year we can
do that. Once a year? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
Kind of celebrating it when we have those plants in our offices and our homes, breathing in the fresh air and recycling our batteries.
Yeah, let's green up Park City. Bring in some plants. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a plan.
So is there anything I didn't ask you, Inza, that I should have?
Well, we mentioned that the snow sports equipment is not recyclable, but it's welcome at the center. But let me just point out again, it's skis, poles, and snowboards only. If anybody can find any use for ski boots and for helmets, let me know what you can make out of it other than, I don't know, houseplant containers or something. We cannot get those recycled. The number of items in there all smushed together are just too difficult to deal with. So if there is anybody out there who knows how to deal with those items, please let me know. We'd love to talk to you. Also, our EPS densifier is working again. Remember last time I was here, we had to shut it down for a couple of weeks after the holidays. But it's back up working again. And those are the white blocks of styrofoam that come with a lot of the food packaging now that we see. So not only a whole lot of Amazon boxes, because we're ordering everything online, and people just don't think about all the packaging that goes along with it, right? So if you have styrofoam peanuts that come with your packages, make sure to bring them to us. We have a reuse program for those. And folks that are new in town, we have a reuse program for your moving boxes. So bring that as well, and the paper. Don't throw it away. It doesn't belong in the landfill. If there's one thing that we should take out of the landfill right off the top is any kind of corrugated cardboard. That would make a huge, huge difference. So there's so many options. And if you're new in town, we invite you to come by, take a look, talk to us. And we can tell you how it works in Summit County. And again, we're doing so much better.
Where are you located?
Thanks for asking.
You bet.
Still right in town on Woodbine and Munchkin Ways. We have the best names in town. So that's right behind the Boneyard.
Okay. Because I am new in town and I need to stop by, bring my girls.
Yes,
along.
You should. Yes, you should.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in and
thank
talking
you.
With us, Inza. That is